afternoon, sluts. I'm Shay.
And I'm Josh.
And this is our Slutty Podcast.
Episode 3. Welcome back. So, for this show, we decided to do something a little different. We are going to interview Shay. She's going to be our guest today. And I'm going to be the interviewer. And what we're going to talk about today is polyamory as a sexual orientation and polyamory versus like dating around and ethical slutitude as experienced by our best friend here, Shay. So with that, I'd like to introduce Shay.
It's me, your co-host and now special guest and interviewee.
Oh my God, it's taken us like, 3 weeks to do this again?
Yeah, well, we've been having problems.
Oh my God.
Not between us, obviously. Our relationship is fine.
Life shows up.
Indeed it does.
Like, it's like hurricane season. When hurricane season comes, you don't get to choose which hurricanes come
your way. When you say that, all I think about is hockey. I'm like, is he talking about hockey? It's like 70-something days there's, until hockey season starts again.
Does Stahl still play for the Hurricanes?
Jordan Stahl, not Eric Stahl.
What's he doing now?
What do you mean? Is Eric Stahl?
No, the older guy.
Yeah, Eric Stahl is the older one. He's playing for somebody else.
Oh, okay. So Brendan Moore is like still the coach?
He is. Oh, okay. Rod the Bod, sexiest coach in the league.
You feel like?
Yeah, he can get it. He can get it all day.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I used to run Spotlight on their games. And I have to say, being in person at a hockey game, well, they used to do the little tracer on the puck on TV, and I loved that. Okay, we're talking about fucking hockey.
This is all I ever want to talk about. No. We have to do the actual podcast.
Okay.
Can't just talk about hockey.
The podcast is
I could
here.
Talk about hockey for 6 hours.
Could you suck dick for 6 hours?
No. Absolutely not. On and off, maybe, but consistently? No. No.
Lockjaw. Okay, so, yeah. Thank you so much for tuning in. We really love checking how many people have listened to this. And, you know, it's encouraging. Even if there were one person that tuned in and left a review, which that's happened, and we're super excited about being liked and followed. We're just not doing this for the money. We're doing this because we have interesting conversations.
What money?
There's literally no money in making content. So the most common question I get from Shay is, my friends want to know what your Twitter is so they can see what you look like. Put a name to the face or put a face to the
Well,
voice.
I've posted, even though I don't post my own face on Twitter, I post your face on my Twitter.
The black and white one?
Behind the scenes of our slutty podcast.
Oh, really? I have not seen that because I don't go on Twitter. Low key, my Twitter picture is like my face in the background and my dick in the foreground, but it's like catching the shadow so you can't tell it's a big fucking cock.
Oh my God.
I love it. I'm like, literally, anybody that looks at my Twitter has to see my dick and they don't realize what they're doing. So yeah, I'm a sick person. But anyway, that's just how I roll. So anyway, this conversation started. We had a different topic for this week. And we were sitting at coffee before the show and we both kind of looked at each other and I said, I haven't thought of anything. And so the topic was going to be
Lovemaking versus sport fucking.
Yeah.
But I was in the same boat. I probably would have only been able to speak on it for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Plus, I like to give you the opportunity to do some form of research.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I had been thinking about it kind of low-key occasionally, where I was like, having a show about sex, okay, there are literally, you know, thousands, I think. I don't know. I haven't counted. Didn't do the research, but I'm a good liar. So I was on the debate team and we learned a thing where you can falsify facts and get away with them as long as nobody checks the veracity of the claim. right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, wow, that would have been a really useful life experience if I wanted to be a politician.
Or like a lawyer.
Or a judge.
Anything.
A businessman.
Sure.
Sure. No ethics at all. Mm-mm. So, yeah, no. So, but the thing about our channel and what service I think it provides is that I think we have really unique, varied backgrounds. And I think you really speak to sort of the Gen Z millennial experience. And I don't think you, like, take that on yourself as, like, a voice of. But I think your perspective is a very honest one. And I think your experience, both, you know, where you've found fulfillment and where you found suffering, are, like, empowering for people that that find your voice. And I think that that's really important, because having the courage to discuss something like intimacy or sexuality, you know, has been sort of taboo in our society. And I think normalizing it through a fucking podcast, you know, we're not going to reveal our stats, but they're growing and we're excited about that. Like, I used to check like 3 times a day, and I was like, okay, I'm being neurotic. So anyway, it's exciting. And here's the thing. If you have like an idea for a podcast and you just want to get going, here's the thing, do it. Because your voice, even if, like I said, even if one person gets something out of what you're sharing and discussing, like, think about that, like, the experience of being able to speak your mind is, like, at the fundamental core of our whole society. And, like, not doing that is really, like, suppression. And I think that we have enough suppression that we don't talk about this kind of stuff. So I think, for me, the practice of us doing this, you know, even if our opinions change next week on something that we said, you know what I mean? Like, I find a lot of value in just doing it. So I was like, fuck it, let's just do it again, you know? So anyway, with that, let's get into this topic. Yeah?
Yeah.
That was a lot of talking. From Josh. Okay. So tell me about, when did you discover that you were, or what polyamory was? When did you find a label? And how did you come to the experience of it being an orientation rather than like a practice?
So I feel that I've always been polyamorous, and I just haven't been able to, like, I hadn't put a name on it probably until I was about 22. But since high school, I feel like I was kind of leaning in that direction. And then it's only recently that I've embraced it as like a sexual orientation and not just as a practice, because, you know, the societal norm is monogamy. So a lot of the time I've put myself in monogamous relationships and attempted to embrace that, and then kind of realized either afterwards or during it that I'm just not made for monogamy. So now when I look back at my like monogamous relationships that I've been in, I was like, yeah, that was me attempting monogamy as a polyamorous person. And that is kind of why I look at it as more of a sexual orientation than just a lifestyle choice. And that's where it kind of comes down to like different kind of classifications for people who are practicing non-monogamy in general.
So there's the distinction. And what's interesting is like, for me, when I think about getting into a relationship, you know, like falling in love with somebody, really liking spending time with them and then sleeping with them. And then, you know, next thing you know, we're going for coffee every morning and, you know, hugs and kisses before work and, you know, texting throughout the day and, oh shit, I'm pregnant. Oh no, I'm not pregnant. You know, the joys of being in a relationship, right? 6 or 8 months later. And I'm like, you know, we're going out to a movie or something and some fucking rad person walks through and I'm like, oh my God, I totally want to fuck that person. And they like look at me and there's this like thing that happens. And then the partner is like watching that go down. And then there's discussions. And, you know, it's like that experience in a very small way. And I think that the paradigm of how we as a culture have sort of been brought up to idealize, you know, finding a partner, falling in love, getting married, you know, going through life together, you know, and that trust is built by, you know, if you're going to stick your, let somebody, you know, if you're, it's like, is that really the foundation of relationships? And I think we're kind of informed that, in fact, and I think that we don't reduce it and simmer it down to really, it's like, whether or not you want to or have put, you know, yourself in a sexual context or thought about putting yourself in a sexual context with another person. And I think that's completely contrary to who we are fundamentally as people and how we've evolved. Yet it's still here, you know? And I've been told that it comes from a place of before we had grocery stores and cars and shit like that, the family really needed to work together to survive, you know? And, like, that's not really the case anymore, you know? Like, I don't need to have four kids to work the fields and or, you know, work jobs or whatever to bring in money. And I don't think that when we were, like, hunter-gatherers and stuff, it was that way. I think that we're sort of having to rediscover that that is an orientation. Just as the same as someone that's completely attracted to somebody of the same sex. I would not try to force them to be anything other than that, you know, because that's coming from within them and they're wired that way. It's not a choice.
And people are very much unwilling to accept that, which is why it's fundamentally controversial for me to be sitting here and saying that polyamory is a sexual orientation. And for me, it's not a lifestyle choice. It is who I am. And people don't like that. I've had a lot of experiences.
Let's talk about the last experience maybe that you had where you were engaging in, you know, socially acceptable boyfriend, girlfriend, committed relationship. How comfortable was that?
So the last person that I dated monogamously long term, we were together for 9 months. I was very much in love with him. There was some delusion that came along with that. Like, I genuinely believed that I could be monogamous. I wanted to be with him forever and get married. And I was kind of like locked into that societal norm, because I was in love with him and that's what he was geared towards. That's been my issue a lot of the time is I'll fall in love with someone and whatever their idea of what a relationship should look like is what I've like kind of aligned myself with because I was feeling deep down like maybe what I wanted to do was wrong because it's not the societal norm. A lot of like internalized inclinations towards monogamy that have not arisen out of myself. But while I was in that relationship, I was very much in love with that person. At no point did I want to not be in a relationship with him. He broke up with me for unrelated reasons.
There was no time that during that relationship where you were like interested in another person?
Yes, I'm about to get into that. So, in my past relationships before him, I have cheated physically a great deal in my monogamous relationships. With him, I did not. I did not cross the line. I did not sext anyone, nothing like that. However, I did fully fall in love with two other people while I was in a relationship with him. I never took it to the point where I said, like, hey, I'm in love with you to the two other people that I was in love with. I obviously did not communicate that to my boyfriend at the time at all. But I couldn't. I tried. I really did. But I couldn't stop myself from developing feelings for other people. And I think that goes to show that it's not just a sexual thing for me. It's not a sexual practice or a lifestyle practice. Like, I am someone who cannot stop myself. And kind of what you were talking about before of like seeing someone and having that connection, before I knew to call it polyamory, what it looked like for me was if I meet someone and I have a connection with them, I don't like feeling like I can't explore that. That brings me a great deal of discomfort. Like, I could get very existential about it. But really, that's what it boils down to, is that, like, if I meet someone and I'm vibing with them, I want to pursue that. I want to experience the joy of getting to know this person. I want them to enjoy me. I don't want there to be any barrier there. And I don't feel like...
It's fair that there is.
Yeah. I mean, for people like me, yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't speak on what anyone else wants to do. Most people are inclined towards monogamy.
So the other side of that, not to cut you off, because I can see that you have more to say, but the other side of that is what is risked by pursuing it? What is the barrier when you're engaged in a long-term intimate relationship with someone that you very much love and enjoy? And then the desire, or what we're going to come up with a term with it for it later, but when that feeling comes up in you, what's the barrier? Talk about that.
The jealousy of the person that I'm with. Like, the primary barrier to exploring those things is jealousy.
How that will affect your other person that you love?
Yeah.
And care about how they feel?
Yeah. There's this, I can't remember if I've talked about it on here before, or just with you in general, but there's this perception of love within relationships as existing within a starvation economy. So indicating that if we're in a relationship and I love someone else, that that takes love away from you because there's only a finite amount of love. And if I'm giving it to another person, then you're somehow receiving less of it from me. I don't find that to be true personally.
Yeah.
Like every single time that I have ventured outside of a relationship, it's not because I'm unhappy in that relationship. It's not because the sex isn't what I want it to be. It's not because I'm not getting something from that person that I need to look elsewhere for. I think that's another common misconception. I'm not looking to have different people in my life, fulfill different roles, put that together, and then that creates one, you know, situation where I feel fulfilled. I feel fulfilled in each of my relationships. Those relationships are very different. I have varying levels of intimacy, life sharing, things that I can talk to different people about. But all of those relationships to me are complete. It's never because I'm unsatisfied with what's going on. Like in my last relationship, I was very much in love with that person. He was amazing. I still think that he's amazing. But that didn't stop me from looking elsewhere, not actively looking elsewhere, but it didn't stop me from falling in love with other people. Not because I wasn't satisfied with the love that I had in my relationship, just because that's who I am.
Here's something that's always been profound to me, is that there are a lot of people out there pursuing, in my opinion, or engaged in LTRs. And what I've noticed is that most of them don't last. And here's the thing. People are seeking it. People are practicing it. But not many of them are actually doing it. And I feel like it's not a topic that is explored enough to where people can go, oh, the reason I keep failing at this is because it's literally the people that I'm seeking aren't designed to function this way. I'm not designed to function this way. Yet, the reason it's not working is I'm going to blame the failures of that other person. I'm going to blame who I pick and who I'm attracted to, quote unquote, air bunnies. But I'm not going to look at myself and the society with which I exist in that's pushing this paradigm on me constantly. As, you know, we see these time warps in film and in TV where these people have these long-term relationships in the course of 2 hours, but it's like a lifetime in the movie. And that idea is like cast on us, that archetype is like cast on us, that we should seek that, that, oh, that's how it's going to turn out happy for me, not thinking that, oh, I'm a human being in a frame of time, which is going to go to the next frame of time, and there's going to be situation and situation, I'm going to continue to meet people and love people, and if someone really loved me, would they not, and wanted to build a life with me, would they not support my exploration of this life in those time frames? And I see so much violence and so much jealousy and so much rage that I wonder if that paradigm were explored further, you know, in terms of how people actually are, not how we idealize ourselves being. That more people might find that that's actually an orientation rather than, you know, oh, you're one of those weird, you know, creepy people that likes to have fuck parties and, you know, share your wife with people. It's like literally not that at all. It's that I get around this person, I vibe with them. When I have a desire to exchange the intense feelings that I have for them in a sexual way, and I can feel that coming from them as well, and that interest is very real. And the disconnect is my partner will flip shit and fucking divorce me, and I will lose my fucking house, and I will be going through a, or whatever, I will lose my shit and, you know, be castigated for being a cheater and all this baggage that is created from the fundamental flaw of, are people really supposed and designed to be, as a species, monogamous?
And not only monogamous, but something that is a theme of all of what you just said is this kind of fallacy that relationships need to last forever to be successful. And I think that we kind of, as people, get lost in having something good and being like, okay, this is good, it needs to last forever. And that's where we find so much suffering, is in that things end. We live different chapters of our lives, and different things belong in different chapters of our lives. Like this year, you know, that boyfriend who I was very much in love with broke up with me. I had, you know, friends walk out of my life, friends that I had been friends with for, yeah, exactly. And then I've had, you know, since the breakup with that person, I've had these kind of shorter term relationships that are like a few weeks or a month, where like I've had very intense feelings for that person, but it's ended. And there's a lot of suffering when we're in the mindset that things need to last a long time to be good, fundamentally. And that's not necessarily true, because what I have learned, even in those 2 week long relationships, is valuable. It has value. The time that I spent with that person is valuable. And just because it's over now, it doesn't subtract from that. I think people have a really hard time wrapping their minds around the fact that things are not supposed to last forever.
You know, I come from the place I was literally born was a center that was exploring. It was called the Human Potential Movement. And there were psychiatrists and psychologists and doctors, and not necessarily hippies, but, you know, consciousness explorers. And they were looking at and trying to practice having a space where we don't take necessarily the traditional values that were handed down to us from our forebears as gospel for the best way for us to move forward as a species. And there were several of these centers all over the world. One that's the most well-known is Esalen in Northern California. And literally they just have symposiums and workshops, and, you know, you could go and study astrology or yoga. Yoga wasn't big back in the 70s. In the States, it was starting to be, but it wasn't as big as it is now, where it's on like every fucking corner. Most people don't realize that yoga comes from the Vedas, which we really don't know when they were written, and they're fucking ancient. And what they say yoga is versus like the hot yoga class that you go to, you might think it sounds like, when you hear just a breakdown of what you're really doing versus what the people that invented it said it was. It's like, it's very mind blowing. And I love that moms are off doing that shit, and, you know, that they don't grasp the full spectrum of what it is that they're practicing. And I look at it as almost like how, like, when I was a kid, like, my mom took me to a lot of different churches to check out. She's like, we're going to check out the Jewish synagogue, we're going to check out the Mormons, we're going to check out the Universalists, we're going to check out, you know, the Unitarians, we're going to check out the Episcopals, the Catholics. And she took me to experience all that. And what I noticed is a lot of people, there would have these homilies, these topics that they would talk about, but they were like taking the information in without applying it or sharing how they were trying to apply what was being spoken. And what I started to get very resentful. I was like, you guys are fucking ridiculous. Like, I've been to your house, hung out with your kids, and heard you screaming at your wife and like screaming at your children. And like last week you were talking about loving your neighbor, and like you don't even love your fucking family. And like it got to a point where I was like, this is just fucking bullshit. Now as an adult, looking back, I realized that we pass on these bits of information that work. And similar to how we are in a relationship, we're attracted to people sometimes for reasons that are deeper than just the superficial, like, I'm attracted to you. I don't know why. Like, I want to spend time with you. I don't know why. Like, there was a time when I thought, I really want to fuck Shay. Like, I got to fuck this girl, right? But our experiences, what I learned over time is that our experiences, sitting together, exchanging ideas, were so much more valuable. And that I wasn't built. There are parts of me when I really love someone where I don't want them to go sleep with somebody that I think is less than conscious. And it's like, you're going to end up hurting by doing that. And it's this weird jealousy thing that comes up that I've had to like really meditate on and work on and understand like where that comes from. And I was so plagued with jealousy only for the people that I fucking love. Like I fucked like 3 different girls over the past month, right? Like not super attached to any of them. And like, but there are girls that I've not slept with that I'm like spend a ton of time with that I would love to smash, but I can't because I know that jealousy will come up. So I've explored it. And what I've found is that there has been some anthropological work that shows when we were cave dwellers, which I know I refer back to this often, but the fact is when we were cave dwellers for 50 or 60,000 years of our development as a species. And interrelationships within the cave weren't infrequent. We can see that people pair bonded, but it wasn't sexually monogamous. And that for the most part of human history, it was the women that chose the sexual partners that they would engage with. And it was not the men. And so that's called, we call that now the matriarchy, right? And when you look at the goddesses that we worshipped and the effigies that are left in the dirt, it's all about women. And you look at even Native American tribes, most Native American tribes were driven, the women were the decision makers. The men were empowered as leaders, but they were chosen by the women. So if we bring that into this 1,000, 2,000 years of Christianity that we've been doing, and we look at how you feel in a relationship and confronting those concepts and rediscovering and claiming in an ethical way how you do that in the context of this space where there are men out there that will never consider these ideas that I've just shared with you, that I found only because I was suffering and I didn't understand why, when somebody that I love chose not to sleep with me anymore and went to sleep with someone else, I felt so bad. And what I learned about jealousy is that the reason that it feels so shitty is because what it really means is that you are cast out of the cave. Outside of the cave, in human history, this means saber-toothed tigers. This means hunting alone. This means having to start a campfire every fucking night that you leave the cave. You have to come back and create fire again. It means the dynamic of a core community has left you. Because the woman that has deemed you part of is saying, no longer. And this, to me, is the root of the disease of jealousy.
Jealousy is a learned behavior.
I think it's a biological response to a delusion.
to a delusion.
Yeah. But the delusion comes from a real place.
Josh is getting naked now.
We turned off my fan. You guys can't see this. We're not streaming live, but anyway. Yeah, I just did a long diatribe, didn't
we? We are streaming live, actually.
Oh, we are?
Yeah.
Twitter Spaces?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Is anybody listening?
No.
Oh, good.
People have been for, like, 2 minutes at a time, but they just can't stand to hear you talk.
Oh, yeah.
They only want to hear me.
I know. Okay, so let's get back to the non-wordy person. Oh, my God. I hate myself.
I'm a non-wordy person?
I mean, like...
That is so offensive.
That's my problem.
You just don't let me talk. That's the problem.
Okay. Yeah, that's why we were doing this podcast, is so that I could interview you.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that information is valid.
No, it is. It's valuable. Yeah, I don't know. What else did we say we were going to talk about?
Okay, well, I kind of bridged the gap between being... when you discovered that you were polyamorous and that there were... you know, there's a culture of that. What did you start to do to embrace it rather than suffer from it?
I mean, I made a decision that I will never be in another monogamous relationship. So I started dating around, right? Being very straightforward with people about, like, this is my deal. And I found that when I was starting to date people who did not have experience with this, that they... we're probably not going to get on board. So I was seeing someone for a few weeks who, the very first time that we hung out, you know, I sat down with him and I was like, here's my deal. I'm polyamorous. I'm not interested in being in a monogamous relationship. And I did my best to explain that to him in a way that I could probably explain more coherently now, but still, I was very open and adamant about that. And then after a few weeks of us seeing each other and me expressing, I believe that you and I are dating, like, I feel like we're in a relationship. In his mind, that meant that I wanted to be monogamous, and I had to break it to him that that was not the case. And he was very, very upset by that. He was very hurt. And his feelings were valid. However, they were delusional because I was very upfront and clear about the fact that that's how that was going to go. And so after that happened, I kind of had to tack on to the decision that I made to, you know, no longer make an attempt to be monogamous because it was never going to work, and say that I'm not going to date people who are not already actively polyamorous or ethically non-monogamous. And this is something we were talking about over coffee earlier, which is that I don't want to be the person who brings people into this lifestyle in the same way that, you know, a gay person would not want to be necessarily in a relationship with someone who's just coming out.
Oh, because you have to be there.
There's a tremendous amount of emotional labor and teaching that has to happen, and a lot of potentially hurt feelings and complications and stress. And I only want to date people who already have experience being poly or ethically non-monogamous because they already know the deal.
They've done the work.
I don't have to explain myself. I don't have to face judgment. You know, I don't have to deal with people being jealous. And of course, jealousy still crops up even in polyamorous and ethically non-monogamous relationships.
So you experience it?
Sure, yeah. But it's something where when I feel jealous, the same way that I feel any emotion that I feel is unacceptable to me, I have to process that internally.
Mm.
When I feel jealous, that's my problem.
Right.
No one's doing that to me. That's an internal thing that I have to take a step back, look at that. Why am I feeling this way? What can I do about it?
Uh-huh.
How can I turn that feeling over so that I can go back to being at peace within myself and with the person that I'm in a relationship with?
A learning opportunity.
Oh, an opportunity. Yeah. But I think that's the main thing that people can't really wrap their head around with polyamory is the jealousy factor. And it does play back into what a lot of you said, about the cave dwellers and where that comes from. But I think a lot of it also stems from insecurity. if I feel, and this comes back to the starvation economy thing as well, if I feel jealous, it's because I feel like I'm not good enough, or someone is seeking something from someone else that they can't get from me. I'm not good enough. It means that they're going to leave me for that person because I'm not good enough. That's why I have to internalize that and not get mad at
their behavior.
The person. Yeah, exactly. Because it makes sense for them to be that way. And that's the thing, is when I'm pursuing something outside of the relationship, I'm chilling, I'm vibing, I'm happy. When someone else does it, if I'm in a good place, if I'm healthy, if I love myself, if I feel a sense of inner peace, that doesn't bother me at all. I experience compersion. I genuinely am happy that that person is happy.
Compersion?
Yeah, it's the opposite of jealousy.
Oh, never heard that one.
Oh, surprise.
Wow.
Compersion is when you feel happy knowing that the person that you're with is happy with someone else.
Huh. Do you think that there's the potential to create a model, a sustainable model of a relationship where, you know, trying to buy a house in this day and age, I've tried to do it on my own, and it's fucking almost impossible. A lot of that I attribute to my past and not being focused on the things that you need to be focused on.
The economy is trash.
But still, I mean, I think, you know, having a home and a little, you know, farm would be fucking cool. But I don't see being able to do it alone. But at the same time, having these experiences where I think I'm polyamorous at heart, but I see also a desire to pair bond. I've felt I can't force a pair bonding, like where I want to literally bond with someone, you know, and that be something that, in my experience, that can't have sex as its root. It can't be the ingredient that, it can't be the thread that weaves the two lives together. It has to come from an unconditional love for it to work. So, like, for example, I could see myself, like, pair bonding with someone and having a house and a farm, but we don't even, like, have sex. You know, like, for me, that would work. But, like, not because of my conditioning. I think that it becomes very difficult to, like, oh, I'm going to go see so-and-so. And in my brain, I'm like, that means you're going to be sucking his dick. That means you're going to be fucking him. That means that I don't get to. And that whole inner diatribe of, you know, attachment becomes very problematic and distracting for me. And so in my experience as an older man, I've gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm just not going to do that anymore. I'm not even going to try and do that. And when I find myself getting engaged with someone in a, oh, wow, we have really good chemistry, really get along, ergo, we should start sleeping together. No. I should care about you. I should hug you. I should make you dinner. I should show up for you. I should answer the phone for you. I should, you know, if I can help you, I will. I should show up at the hospital if you have to go. I should be there when you're dating people and you're getting attached and exploring these feelings and it doesn't work. Those, to me, are really what makes a family, more so than, you know, trying to fall in love with somebody that's still really discovering the hardware that their operating system is existing in, you know? And I think I really have to hand it over to you because you're discovering this at you're 28, 27, I forget, I'm sorry.
I'm 27.
27. So, you know, we've talked about this, but the, you know, you're literally reaching adulthood and you have found sort of the software that can functionally help you navigate through the rest of your life in a healthier way, you know? And I see that by these ethical points that you're bringing into your practice and the discovery, you know what I mean? Obviously, we still have breakdowns, right? Because
I've had a bad week, y'all. But
you want to talk about it a little?
I mean, sure.
So where did it stem from?
So I kind of got caught up in this delusion, following, you know, series of, like, losses going on this year, you know, being broken up with by my boyfriend, my friends, I kind of got it in my head that I needed to have this brand new, different life and that everything had to be different. A lot of that was centered around money. A lot of that was centered around starting a lot of new projects and doing them not necessarily because I was passionate about them, but because I wanted to make money. Mm. Doing this is a good example of where that is positive, because we're not making money doing this. I'm doing this because this is a passion project for me. I love doing this. I don't care if it ever makes money.
Same.
So kind of coming to that realization that this delusion was like making me, and I guess going back to it, is like when things were not working out, a lot of things were not working out. A lot of things that I was putting time and energy into were not working out, and I made myself miserable by obsessing over those things.
Right.
And so facing that delusion, I didn't want to admit that it was a delusion, so I fell into a very, very deep depression.
Got disconnected.
Everything flooded back into my head that was wrong, that has been wrong, not only this year, but in, like, the last, like, few years, all of this stuff that hasn't gone my way, all just, like, flooded back into my head of, like, oh, things never work out for me. So I guess just facing that delusion and getting back into gratitude, getting back into acceptance, and really appreciating what I do have, which is so much, so much. I'm so unbelievably blessed. That's what brought me out of it.
Any new meditation practices that have helped at all?
Josh got me into this, like, cold shower kind of shock therapy situation where, like, you turn the water in the shower to basically as cold as you can stand, and it makes your body not be able to have any other thoughts besides how fucking cold it is. And I know there's science behind it that I'm sure you're just dying to explain. Okay.
Look up Wim Hof.
But no, that was really helpful as well, because throughout this whole thing, I just couldn't turn off my brain. Of course, there are moments where my brain was so overwhelmed that my only thought in my head was like, I'm miserable, life is fucked, this is the worst, and everything is terrible. But I mean, surrounding that was just like a tremendous number of voices in my head saying, like, you know, this is a problem, that's a problem, that's a problem, that's a problem. And just really struggling to see the good in any of it. But I mean, all those negative experiences and, you know, being in a depressive episode is something that I learned from, and I'm really grateful for it now because it shattered that delusion for me so that I can move forward.
And you went to a concert last night.
I did. I went to Phish. It was awesome.
And so was that your first public excursion since the mental withdrawal?
Yeah, I barely left my apartment for like 4 or 5 days, which is not great.
Well, it's cool that you have a, you know, a career that allows you to do that, right?
Not really. I didn't work all week, which is really bad, and I don't have any PTO, so I'm a little bit brokey-broke. But here's the thing. I was obsessing over money, and in breaking down as a result of that, I was in a position where I was actively losing money for 4 days.
Yeah.
Ask me if I'm worried about that.
Are you worried about that?
No.
No.
It's all going to be fine.
Your needs will be met.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a cool thing about being connected with Sky Daddy.
Thank you, Sky Daddy.
Sky Daddy makes gold, and Sky Daddy makes platinum, and Sky Daddy makes diamonds, and therefore I get what I need.
All right, so if we're talking about Sky Daddy, it's probably time to wrap up.
Oh, shit. Should we, though?
I don't know. What else do we have to talk about?
Well, so you talked about compersion, mm-hmm. and one of the topics that I've, you know, seen not a lot of people delineate is the difference between falling in love and limerence. Do you know this word, limerence?
I'm familiar.
And in what sense? Like, tell me a little bit about your idea of what limerence is.
Well, my good friend Josh.
Oh, tell me more about this guy. He sounds sexy and attractive and timeless.
So,
a bit like Peter Pan.
Here's the thing. Like a couple months ago, I met someone on the internet and I fell madly in love with him. And I told him that I loved him on the first date, and that was a lot. And I was, it was very much, and then, you know, he ended that after getting very overwhelmed by it, which I totally understand. And I was crushed. And so Josh, as usually happens when I reach out to you about stuff that's going on, you tell me something that I don't want to hear, and then I look into it, and then it's good. But it's just basically that obsession of meeting someone and then having them consume all of my thoughts and idealizing them, and how that plays into like a bigger pattern of unhealthy attachment.
So here's the definition. The state of being infatuated or obsessed with another person, typically experienced involuntarily and characterized by a strong desire for reciprocation of one's feelings.
Yeah.
How often do you think that it's possible that people in general are seeking limerence above air bunnies falling in love? And does that not speak more to the polyamorous nature of people than it does, like, what they're actually doing? Does it make sense? Sort of the form of it. The error of trying, like, when you said, I'm in love with you, your inner, you know, bad bitch was probably going, what the fuck are you doing right now? That was a mistake.
In my head, in the moment, my inner bad bitch was like, you are making a mistake. This is not cool. This is too much. You know that. You know from experience that this is only going to lead to suffering, and yet you're doing it anyway. Yeah, it's not great. And that leads to something that doesn't necessarily play into my polyamory. That's an issue that I have to explore within that framework.
Like there's trauma in there somewhere?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've got it too.
Big time.
Yeah. I found EMDR to be very, very, very helpful in processing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said earlier, like the difference between jealousy and compersion is owning and going, oh, yeah, got to work on that, you know? And my partner isn't the most qualified person to work on that with me.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that,
like, most of my issues surrounding love have nothing to do with the people that I've been in relationships with.
Yeah. And I think that might be one of the keys to creating sustainable community relationships. And I'm not saying it like I can expect other people to pick up that baton and practice self-care and, like, you know, maintaining and being available to people that they're intimate with while they're going through, you know, my trauma's triggered. I know that you were attracted to me and that this isn't attractive, but I swear to God, if you give me, you know, a month or two, like, that attraction will still be there and we can continue. Most people are like, okay, that's gross, that's ugly, you are disqualified from being in my life, fuck off for good, right?
Mm.
And I think that's fucked up.
Look at us.
We never fucked.
This is true. However, the first few times that we...
Oh, it was happening.
...were in each other's lives, that was very much on the table.
Yeah, and that's probably why it wasn't a couple of months. It was a, what, like 9 months or a fucking year where we didn't talk?
We did not talk for a year.
I couldn't... I was experiencing that same feeling of not being good enough. Not being enough for someone that I wanted to be enough for.
Yeah.
And I think the delusion is that expectation is not even really what it was about. It was really about my inability to confront my trauma and to really to take responsibility for it and treat it. And my experience growing up has been the castigation, the separation, the he's not mentally well. You know, because he's exhibiting intense feelings, you know, and mental confusion. And I don't want to be around that. And so that's terrifying for me. It's like, No, I'm a loving person. I'm really a nice person. I'm really special. But don't go. You know?
Yeah.
And it sucks. And it's like the little kid is just like, I just want friends to play with. You know? And like, you can't have both things. You have to maintain. And it took me a very long time to understand that. It's very much a part of day-to-day life, just like taking a shower. It's like, I know that that trauma's there. I know that I'm still journaling on it. I'm still praying about it, meditating. I do my cold showers to try and get a God's eye view of it. That's what I call it. You know, just super conscious view where I'm not so attached to how I feel. Yeah. And over time, it's developed more healthy, intimate relationships than I had in the past, you know?
But you have to do a tremendous amount of work on yourself to be ready to be in a relationship with someone else. I think most people can't grasp that.
Yeah. Wow. Big topics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I think we're at about an hour.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to touch on?
I'm good.
Okay, cool. This is episode 3, and I'm so glad we got together and made this happen.
Me too. Please subscribe to our podcast. We're going to try and get it on some more platforms. If you like it, please leave us a 5-star review. And if you don't like it, just forget that I even said anything about reviews. They don't exist.
Yeah. If you can take 5 seconds and maybe just comment on our Slutty Podcast on whatever platform you're listening to us on, that would be super cool, because I think it would be fucking awesome to read the comment that we got. Don't you?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to pull it up real quick.
Okay.
So, any hot dates coming up this week?
Maybe.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I started seeing a new person last week. Pretty stoked about his existence. He's a very complex person.
Does he know about our Slutty Podcast?
He does, yeah.
What were his thoughts?
We didn't really get into it.
Oh, that's cool.
But I think that he thinks that it's cool that I'm like in touch with myself enough and how I feel about things to put it out there like this.
All right. So here's our comment. We got a 5-star review. Here it is. And that's from ThatMaffo32. He says, with so many points of view about so many things in today's world, these two definitely got my attention and also gives listeners a chance to honestly evaluate their own point of views or opinions about the topics being discussed. Big fan from day one.
Thanks. Aww,
we love you. Oh, we would love to have more guests. So, you know, slide in the DMs and let us know you're out there. Because, you know, how can we build a community if we don't know who you are?
Yeah.
All right. Well, much love, all. Have a great week. And look forward to next week's topic or the week after when we get to the next one.
All right. Bye, sluts.
Bye, whores.